I'm Andy Wilson from the Association for Musical Marxists. It's very... What did I say? Well,
four. Association four.
Four, no. It's very exciting for us to... For us, very challenging. Because, you know, if we do political meetings in Britain, in the UK, you know, we're going to be speaking to a group of trade union militants or a group of revolutionary communists or anarchists or students occupying or whatever it is. But if at any point it is confusing or you don't understand what I'm saying and there's a consensus about that, stop me and we'll step in and help me out. So having said that, the main speakers tonight are Ben and Keith. Keith's going to talk about the Second World War in a book we've recently published about the Second World War. And Ben's going to talk about the AMM. But I thought that it might be useful for you if we explain something of our background collectively and individually, and something at least in a very compressed form about where we're coming from politically and what our political starting point was, from which we developed the ideas that led us to form the Association of Musical Marxists, the AMM. So the first thing I want to say about that is how crucial these arguments are, and I don't need to explain why these arguments are crucial, because if you turn on the news now, it's now manifestly obvious that the capitalist system of the West and elsewhere is entering a deep crisis, and the assumptions that people have had for many years about what is the nature of the political system that they live in and what is the inherent nature of our political opposition to that system, and questions about what it is possible to do, and questions about what the capitalist state is and what its room for manoeuvre is, are now the burning questions of the day. And in many ways, the revolutionary left, the hard socialist left, if you like, has been deeply unprepared for what's happening now and what is about to happen. In terms of trying to explain our political background, I want to say something about our political development and our political ideas, because the three of us have all, for many years, decades, essentially been militants, either members of or aligned with the Socialist Workers' Party, in the UK Socialist Workers' Party. I don't know if you know them, but they're the biggest group on the revolutionary left in Britain, the biggest Trotskyist group, and ergo, actually, in Britain, the biggest revolutionary grouping. So we've been associated with them for many years, long-term members. I used to be a full-time organiser for the SWP in Liverpool. Keith used to run their print shop, and so on and so forth. So we've many, many years of alignment with them. And what I want to say, first of all, about that is that why we were members of the Socialist Workers' Party, quite apart from and I'm going to talk about theoretically why, what the theoretical position of the Socialist Workers' Party is that forms our political background. And the gist of their politics is based on their state capitalist analysis of Russia and the countries of Eastern Europe. In other words, they have an analysis which said that Russia, for example, was under Stalin and subsequently a capitalist society, albeit a capitalist society that was run centrally through the state. Now, this raises tremendous theoretical questions which you may or may not deeply care about, but the reason those issues matter for us is because for us, they kept the idea of Marxism as a revolutionary force. They kept the idea of Marxism alive because the rest of the left was completely crushed by the impact of the defeat of the Russian Revolution. And they were crushed in many ways, not directly through, you know, formal Stalinist politics, not only through that, but also the ideas of social democracy, which were presented as the alternative to what was seen as being the Russian experiment in communism, dominated the labour movement as well as a reaction against what was happening in Russia. And for us, what those politics, what social democracy has in common with Stalinism, as we would have called it, is the idea of representational politics. In other words, instead of the idea that the working class can control society themselves and can themselves dominate and run a society, the idea is that necessarily that cannot happen. And therefore, we had in Britain as elsewhere, the Labour Party, the Social Democratic Party, whose idea was that, you know, socialists had to operate through the apparatus of the capitalist state at every level, and that they had to, the Labour politicians had to do the work of socialism for you, and your role is simply to vote for these politicians. And I want to use the term tonight, representational politics. Will that make sense to people? You are represented, but you yourself don't exercise democracy. You yourself don't exercise power. You may be allowed every few years to spend a few minutes at the ballot box voting for somebody, but outside of those few minutes, you have no real control or power. And this is the essence of social democracy. And the Social Democrats align themselves with the capitalist economy and with the capitalist state, arguing that nothing else fundamentally was possible, and therefore, if you were a realist as a socialist, you had to deal with the capitalist state, which ultimately meant that you had to enter it and run it, which ultimately meant that social democracy attacked the labour movement when it was in power, because they saw it as their job to run the capitalist economy. But I guess most of you already know a lot about that kind of thing. The novel part of the argument of the of state capitalism is the idea that that Russia and the countries of Eastern Europe, principally, but also Cuba, China, but principally the Russian system, was also a form of capitalism. And this is, the SWP have a specific formulation of what they define as state capitalism. But what I want to emphasise tonight is that it wasn't unique to them. And there was always, you know, even in the Russian Revolution and in the years immediately after the Russian Revolution, there were currents of the Bolshevik Party that also began to develop a state capitalist analysis of the Russian regime at that time. And of course, those people were eclipsed and their tradition was extinguished, principally by Stalin sending all of those people into the labour camps and liquidating an entire generation of revolutionaries in order to consolidate the power of the Russian ruling class. Nevertheless, that understanding of what was happening in Russia and in the East, understanding that that was a new form of capitalism. Theoretically, Engels and the old German SPD, LaSalle and people like that, theoretically had an understanding of the possibility of state capitalism. So Engels in Socialism, Utopian or Scientific talks about the theoretical possibility that the bourgeoisie might manage the whole of the capitalist economy through the state, and that's a theoretical possibility. He argued that in fact that's very unlikely to happen because of the inherent competition between different factions of the bourgeoisie would stop them creating this totally centralised capitalist state. But of course what happened in Russia was that before it was state capitalist, the Bolsheviks had led a genuine working class revolution, and that in essence the working class had centralised the state, had seized control of the state. But with the degeneration of the Russian Revolution, the emergent Stalinist bureaucracy, because of the great crisis in Russia, because of the invasion of the White Armies trying to suppress the Russian Revolution, and basically the decimation and destruction of the working class in Russia, and its destruction as a political force, as a conscious political force, it was destroyed by the chaos of the civil war and so on, that allowed the Stalinist bureaucracy to coalesce around the organs of the state and eventually end up running the whole of Russia as a capitalist enterprise. That theory has been crucially important for us theoretically as an explanation of what happened to the labour movement and to the revolutionary left around the world throughout the 20th century, the almost complete extinction of the revolutionary Marxist tradition and its replacement by substitutions, by representational politics. Whether those representational politics were the social democratic politics of you are represented at the level of the bourgeois state and that's the best you can do, or in other forms of that, there's the idea that the class struggle takes place internationally through the medium of the various states who compete in imperialist terms internationally. So in other words, and Keith will be talking a lot about this, the idea that the class struggle really took place between Russia and America, the forces of democracy on the one hand and so-called communism on the other, and therefore if you were a militant in the West, as far as Stalinists were concerned, your job was to support Russia. Okay, and that sort of politics still dominates much of the left today, and I don't want to go into why I think that's the case, but you see when people talk, and I know that the whole anti-Deutsch business, where people say, you know, your job as a socialist is to support America against whatever, whether it's against Islam or whatever, to support Israel as a bastion of democracy or however they want to call it. These are also forms of representational politics which involve the complete abandonment of the idea of socialism as a form of radical working class self-expression and radical working class power. Socialism as an idea of socialism built from the ground up, socialism from below, as workers actually taking control of their lives and of the societies that they live in and controlling it for themselves. That idea has been eclipsed entirely, almost extinguished in the 20th century. And yet now, today, we need that idea more than ever before, because as the capitalist system and the West enters the crisis that is happening at the moment, you'll find that workers will begin to step back onto the stage of history in a visible way. And you'll see the beginnings of those things happening. And I'm talking about, obviously, about things like the Occupy movements, but spreading those into the core of society, into the working class itself. All of those things will begin to happen, but what comes out of the other end of that depends on how socialists relate to those movements and what they have to say about them now. And for socialists to do that job properly, they have to begin to rediscover the ideas of the self-activity of the working class and the absolute centrality of workers' power as the essence of revolutionary Marxism. I probably already talked too much, but I just want to add a little bit on top of that, which is, so that's our background, and that's the politics we share. But it doesn't explain anything about why we began to move a bit beyond that to form the Association of Musical Marxists and to develop ideas about the centrality of culture. And it's Ben's job, really, to explain that later. But I want to say that what my experience of being... So I've defended the theoretical traditions of the British SWP, but nevertheless, as a militant in the SWP, I also found that increasingly they began to take the form of a top-down organisation with a structure in which Marxism was something handed down from on high by the leadership. Now, this completely contradicts everything we understand from that tradition about socialism coming from below. The idea became almost that Marxism was a finished science. It was something you could study, you could learn, and if you understood it properly, you could then apply it in practice. And this is a completely, as an idea, this is completely alien to our tradition. This idea that Marxism exists in a finished form now. Because the world doesn't exist in a finished form now, and Marxism is nothing if it isn't applied time after time to the situation we find ourselves in which that situation is constantly changing. The only real Marxism is a Marxism that is reapplied to over and over and over again, in which new things emerge, in which new understandings emerge, and in which we do that as a collectivity, in which we do that together. And yet increasingly it seemed to us that our tradition itself was beginning to ossify?
Yeah.
Harden up, reify, to turn into bone, you know, stop being a living thing and become a tradition that itself was handed down from on high. And increasingly there was a hierarchy within our organisation. And the reason we began to talk about culture and the centrality of culture to our understanding of politics was because it's in our experience of culture that we not only apply our ideas, but we find the meeting place between subject and object, between our experience of the world. What it is, you know, when you go to a concert, you don't go there to experience it in journalistic terms. You go there to experience the music, to have a feeling. It means things to you. It relates to different aspects of your experience. And you want to turn that into Marxism, and that is very much like the living Marxism that we feel is necessary, because it's constantly being renegotiated and it's a constantly moving target, as we say. There's a lot more I could say about that, but I won't. So I hope I've done something at least to explain our background as militants and as supporters, you know, state capitalists, as we would say in the UK, with state caps. I hope I've tried to explain why that idea is important to us, but I hope I've also tried to explain why that idea is so important that we felt that we need to move beyond the traditional forms of Trotskyism and the organised, you know, the kind of the militants you get on the left who are, you know, studied politics at university and now they're going to marshal you around a meeting or something like that. And we want to get, you know, beyond that model into a model of Marxism. You know, this isn't about, we want to talk about culture because we enjoy, of course we enjoy the music that we write about, but we write about it and think about it because for us it's a way of, it's a brilliant model for understanding how Marxists should relate to everything and not just to culture. So that having been said, I hand you over to Keith Fisher, who is not only a comrade of mine, but you know, we
what became, else am I?
Well, Keith and I met at college 30 odd years ago, and he recruited me to the SWB more or less. And we've been comrades ever since.
So it's all my fault. Yes. So the